We had to talk about that evidence. And even they, and when they heard about how much a baby goat suffers when they have pneumonia, when they heard about the fact that one of the baby goats was covered of lice and unable to stand, and they were swayed. Because I think the reality is, when any of us are confronted with the reality of what happens in some of these industrial slaughterhouses and farms, or even small-scale facilities, even the thought of cutting one animal's throat, killing one animal, is disturbing. And they were swayed. And that's a victory for us, I think.
Wayne Shung, we want to thank you for being with us, animal rights advocate, co-founder of Direct Action Everywhere, just convicted on felony charges of burglary and larceny for removing a sick baby goat from a goat meat farm. Got a suspended sentence of 2 years. Thanks to everyone who tuned in for our 25th anniversary celebration Tuesday night. You can watch the full event at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO's end of the year drive is happening right now, and we invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute now through December 31st, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 thanks to the generous support of the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, local woman sues the city over a health impact of tear gas. Healthcare workers strike in Springfield, and in national news, Biden suffers setback on vaccine requirements. Good evening, this is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 8th, 2021. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. Portland resident Liz Vasquez is suing the city for harmful side effects of tear gas. Vasquez's home in the Buckman neighborhood was close to the site of Southeast Portland protests during summer 2020. Police would regularly hit protesters with tear gas in the residential neighborhood. Vasquez reported her symptoms online, including respiratory problems, severe cramping, and irregular periods. Other Portlanders shared similar side effects. The Portland Police Bureau is currently facing lawsuits over excessive use of force during last year's protests. Studies show that tear gas has been linked to reproductive health problems for female-bodied people. Vasquez's defense team is seeking up to $10,000 in damages, but their primary concern is preventing the police bureau from using tear gas in populated areas. Vasquez says that the bureau's excessive use of chemical weapons is, quote, an assault on the entire city. In other protest news, Proud Boy Alan Swinney admitted yesterday to assaulting a woman during last year's protests. According to the terms of his settlement, he won't have to pay any of the $250,000 charges. The terms of the settlement were offered by his victim's lawyer. Michael Fuller represents Megan McLean, who was shot by Swinney with a paintball gun in August 2020. Fuller said of Swinney, quote, "We weren't looking to collect a dime from him anyway." Swinney was convicted of assault, menacing, and unlawful use of a weapon. In addition to his paintball assault, he sprayed bear mace at counter-protesters and wielded a loaded revolver. 50 earthquakes were reported off the Oregon coast today. Despite widespread fears of the big one, a major earthquake predicted in the northwest, seismologists say that these pose no threat to residents on the mainland. Quakes occurred alongside the Blanco Fracture Zone, which is not connected to the Cascadia megathrust predicted to cause a large earthquake in the next 50 years. The Blanco Fracture Zone is among the most active seismic zones in North America, but is also relatively safe. In 2008, 600 earthquakes were recorded along the fault in only 10 days. Healthcare workers in Springfield, Oregon, are striking for the second time in 2 months. Their demands include better pay and, ironically, better healthcare. Here with more on the story is Oregon's Eric Tagetoff.
Strikes that erupted in what became known as Striketober aren't over yet. After a two-day strike in October, healthcare workers at McKenzie Willamette Medical Center in Springfield have walked out again to push management to finish up contract negotiations. More than 300 healthcare workers and members of Service Employees International Union Local 49 are striking this week through Friday for better pay and protections on the job. Erin Green, a certified nursing assistant at the hospital, spoke from the picket line about pay during the pandemic.
Wages over the last 2 years have increased substantially across the state, but McKenzie hasn't kept up, and it really shone a light on how important affordable healthcare is for healthcare workers.
A spokesperson for McKenzie Willamette Medical Center says representatives from the hospital have met extensively with SEIU members, but that members turned down its proposal to increase wages, leading to this week's walkout. It says hospital operations will continue uninterrupted. Green says the lack of job competitiveness has consequences. He says the hospital has hired new people that have only stuck around for 1 or 2 months.
Then they turn around and leave to another facility that is providing better pay and better health care, which then leaves our patients feeling that because there's less of us to do the same amount of work, so we're doing the work of 2 or 3 people.
Rachel Gordon, who is also a CNA at the hospital, says workers want more COVID-19 protections. She also believes the hospital's proposed increase to healthcare costs is unaffordable.
I mean, I would rather be at work inside this building here versus being outside. So there's a problem inside if we're outside.
SEIU Local 49 members at McKenzie Willamette Medical Center were among the first to go on strike in October, when thousands of workers across the nation also walked out for better conditions on the job. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tagetoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Cereal company Kellogg rejected a deal with the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union. Strikers demanded a 3% raise to meet rising costs of living and reflect their 80-hour work weeks, as well as assumed risks from working in factories during the pandemic. Workers were also responding to planned job cuts and outsourcing, as well as reduced benefits for new employees. Kellogg replaced the strikers, many of whom had been working 16 hours a day without breaks for over 4 months. 1,400 scabs will be filling the roles of workers the company had once praised as, quote, heroes. Kellogg President Chris Hood said, quote, "We have an obligation to our customers and consumers to continue to provide the cereals that they know and love." Fourth-generation Kellogg employee and union president Trevor Bittleman said of the company, quote, "They don't even treat us as well as they do their machinery." Labor relations experts expect that degrading working standards may make it difficult for Kellogg to find hires willing to cross the picket line. While the Supreme Court weighs the possibility of eliminating Roe v. Wade, a court case from Maine may determine whether the court strikes down another 2 fundamental rights: the separation of church and state, and the right to public education. The lawsuit filed by Maine parents demands that a state tuition program cover religious schools. If the conservative-led court rules in favor, it could open the doors for public funding to go directly towards explicit religious activities. The Bangor school in question has also violated LGBTQ rights by refusing to hire gay teachers or admit transgender students. Conservative justices in the past have stood up for Christian adoption services that refuse to work with same-sex couples. A Biden administration panel investigated Supreme Court packing this week, but refused to take a stance. President Biden held a virtual conference yesterday with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The two hope to resolve tensions over the Ukraine border crisis. With more on this and other stories, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
He told President Putin directly that if Russia further invades Ukraine, the United States and our European allies would respond with strong economic measures.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan recounted President Biden's 2-hour virtual meeting yesterday with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The two leaders spoke as a troop buildup on the Ukrainian border has exacerbated fears about a potential Russian military invasion of its neighbor. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell confirmed Tuesday a deal has been reached on raising the nation's debt limit, which can now pass with a simple majority.
I think this is in the best interest of the country by avoiding default. I think it is also in the best interest of Republicans who feel very strongly that the previous debt ceilings that we agreed to when President Trump was here carried us through August.
New York Representative Adriano Espaillat joined activists on Capitol Hill Tuesday calling on senators to include a path to citizenship in the Build Back Better legislation.
We must make sure that the Senate hears this loud and clear, that if our ruling is adversarial to us, that we must move forward and challenge her ruling and make sure we take this vote on the floor. Let the votes fall where they may.
Espaillat is the first formerly undocumented immigrant to serve in Congress. The National School Boards Association is facing a loss of funding and membership after sending a letter comparing parent protest and threats to domestic terrorism. Center for Renewing America President Russ Vogt commented on how controversies could influence the 2022 midterms.
I think it will be a central issue. Wokeism, critical race theory, as it manifests in schools, parents are increasingly waking up to it.
The Senate Judiciary Committee heard testimony on Tuesday on Guantanamo Bay Prison's operations, conditions, and efforts to close it. National Security Institute Executive Director Jamil Jaffer spoke about the risks of closing Guantanamo and bringing detainees to the U.S.
If we bring them voluntarily to the United States, there's the possibility that they'll receive significantly more rights and significantly more opportunities under our own laws.
The White House marked the first ever Maternal Health Day of Action on Tuesday. Vice President Kamala Harris.
Black women are three times as likely to die from pregnancy-related complications. We should do something about that. When we know that Native American women are more than twice as likely to die from pregnancy-related complications, we've got to do something about that.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants a democracy for Christmas.
Every week we see more how helpless our government is to meet its people's needs and preferences. Maybe not helpless, but unwilling, as dedicated government workers are blocked from doing their duty by the executives of their departments who see government as a source of personal wealth and power. Like those campaign funding junkies in Washington doing all they can to stay in their dealers' good graces. A trickle of cash for infrastructure and health care, $778 billion for the War Department, while Biden's few actions are blocked by Republican lawsuits and Trump-appointed judges. What good are laws? Like you must answer a subpoena, you must pay your taxes without some way to enforce them. Is American democracy on the downslide of the bell curve, and we just have to prepare for the rebound, network, learn, create, use the system for all we can? As the opposite of progressive isn't conservative but regressive, and there's much of America's past most of us don't want to go back to. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. We'll be listening into a conversation about how election subversion threatens America's national security with three noted national security experts. At 6 o'clock, it's Rhythm Nation with Peter Marks. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy and in the 30s. Rain and low temperatures will continue tomorrow. Today in 1974, the country of Greece abolished its monarchy by a plebiscite. The Greek monarchy started in 1832 when Britain, France, and Russia installed a Bavarian prince as head of state. The quote of the day is from birthday boy Diego Rivera. Quote, Marx made theory, Lenin applied it in the sense of large-scale social organization, and Henry Ford made the work of a socialist state possible. No secret that colleges have had trouble retaining students during the pandemic, but one recent study shows that in Colorado schools, students of color were much more likely to take time off. With more on this story, here's Eric Galatas.
Women and low-income students disproportionately put their college careers on hold during the pandemic, according to a new report. Of the 13,000 Coloradans who stopped out of college over the past 3 years, 43% were students of color. Angie Piccioni with the Colorado Department of Higher Education explains when family members got sick and couldn't go to work, many students stepped in to help out.
We forget that there are extended families, especially in different cultures, where everybody pitches in, and it's not just mom, dad, and, you know, two children. When you have to pitch in for the entire family, then students of color in particular have stopped out.
When elementary schools closed, many adult students who couldn't afford childcare also decided to stay home with their kids. Piccioni says the state is making big investments to help these students return to classrooms to finish degrees or to get skills needed to land higher paying jobs. Students can connect with scholarships, tutoring, food assistance, and other supports online at readytoriseco.org. Piccioni says completing a degree or certificate program is critical for maximizing a student's lifetime earning potential. She points to the Finish What You Started program as a great way to get back on track.
This is scholarship money and wraparound services at the institutions of higher ed that will help students who have started a degree but had to drop out for whatever reason, life happens, finish what they started.
Many of the state's four-year colleges can now award associate degrees to students who completed enough coursework before stopping out. Piccioni says her team is also working to expand apprentice opportunities across the state.
To try to give students an early experience in the workforce so that, number one, they can see what they're missing, and number two, they can see what they need, and the employer can also try out, so to speak, students before they actually offer them a position.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. This is Eric Galatas reporting for the Colorado News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Last night, the House passed the National Defense Authorization Act by a vote of 363-70, with 51 Democrats and 19 Republicans voting no. The NDAA includes $25 billion more in spending than President Joe Biden requested in his budget blueprint earlier this year. The $770 billion bill passed with minimal opposition, in striking contrast with Biden's watered-down Build Back Better Act aimed at addressing human needs. The final version of the NDAA, which leadership from both chambers have agreed to, contains changes to how sexual assault and harassment are prosecuted and handled within the military, a 2.7% pay increase for military service members and Defense Department civilian employees, and $300 million in military aid to the Ukrainian Security Assistance Initiative. All three of President Joe Biden's vaccination requirements covering the private sector have been frozen in the court. U.S. Judge R. Stan Baker of the Southern District of Georgia ruled yesterday that Biden exceeded his constitutional authority by requiring federal contractors and employees to be fully vaccinated by January 18. Enforcement had already been halted in Kentucky, Ohio, and Tennessee by another federal judge, but Baker's ruling applies nationwide. Biden announced last month that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, would soon be enforcing a life-saving emergency temporary standard at companies with 100 or more workers. Measures include mandatory vaccination, testing, and mask wearing. British oil company BP, the same firm responsible for the catastrophic Deepwater Horizon spill, reached a settlement with the federal government over illegal pollution at one of its Indiana facilities. With more, here's Jonah Chester.
International oil and gas producer BP will pay more than $500,000 to the federal government as part of a legal settlement over air pollution from the company's Indiana plant in Whiting. The Whiting facility is BP's largest oil refinery in the world and overall the sixth largest in America. Sung-hyun Lee, an attorney with the Environmental Integrity Project, one of the plaintiffs in the case, says the plant will be required to follow new monitoring and reporting standards.
The refinery is going to be required to install a number of new continuous analyzers that'll be tracking certain operating parameters related to said production, and they'll need to monitor those on an hourly basis going forward.
The company will provide that information to state and federal environmental agencies and to the environmental advocacy groups that filed the suit. In a statement, a BP spokesperson said the company was pleased to resolve the dispute and is, quote, committed to safe, reliable, and compliant operations at the Whiting Refinery, unquote. The settlement was negotiated by the Justice Department on behalf of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The lawsuit alleged that, in addition to violating legal limits on soot pollution, BP also failed to quickly report and correct pollution from petroleum processing units and didn't continuously operate air pollution control equipment. Lee says the new reporting requirements will provide more transparency about the refinery's emissions.
You shouldn't just look at it strictly in terms of monetary penalty. The goal in the citizen groups bringing this action really was to just ensure that going forward, this facility is going to be meeting its soot limits.
The plant was constructed in 1889 by Standard Oil and is located about 20 miles southeast of Chicago along the Lake Michigan shoreline. According to BP, the facility is able to process about 440,000 barrels of crude oil per day. For the Indiana News Service, I'm Jonah Chester. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
High gasoline prices? Saudi Aramco's chief executive, Amin Nasser, told the delegates at the World Petroleum Congress in Houston, Texas, that adapting to cleaner fuels overnight could trigger uncontrolled economic inflation. Nasser said, quote, "The world is facing an ever more chaotic energy transition centered on highly unrealistic scenarios and assumptions about the future of energy." However, energy experts and economists argue that the global energy market surge, which has triggered blackouts, higher bills, and the shutdown of factories in some countries, should encourage policymakers to accelerate the move away from volatile fossil fuels. According to an investigation by The Guardian, Saudi Arabia's state-owned oil company has made the biggest contribution to the carbon dioxide emissions responsible for the climate crisis of any major company, with Chevron coming in second. The site of a residential school for indigenous children in Alaska is up for grabs by developers, but after the discovery of mass graves at several Canadian schools, many are urging a conscientious approach. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A government boarding school for Native children in Wrangell was one of the first of its kind in Alaska and operated for 43 years before closing in 1975. Now, there are plans to redevelop the site of the former Bureau of Indian Affairs facility. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, sensitivity towards the legacy of abuse and trauma and recent discoveries of graves at former residential schools in Canada have caused local officials to tread carefully before breaking ground.
When the city and borough of Wrangell applied in May for a federal wetlands fill permit to start developing the 134-acre former Wrangell Institute property, the Army Corps of Engineers stated it was unaware of any cultural resources at the site. But days later, news broke of a grisly discovery in Canada. The remains of more than 200 Native children were found on the grounds of a former residential school in British Columbia. In the following weeks, more than 1,000 bodies would be discovered at the sites of former residential schools across Canada, shedding light on the country's dark history of mistreatment of Indigenous peoples. The discovery brought the redevelopment process of the former Institute property to a halt, while federal and state investigations comb records and survey the grounds for cultural resources or hidden burial sites. Esther Reese, whose Tlingit name is Achsin, is the tribal administrator for the Wrangell Cooperative Association, Wrangell's local tribe.
We're just happy to be able to work with the city on something that's of critical importance and a sad part of history of our people. So it's very appropriate that the city is working with the tribe on it.
Located at a Thlinkit site known as Kishan Gitaan, or Aldertop Village, the boarding school opened in 1932. It was not affiliated with any particular religious denomination, although federal records show Rangel's Catholic priest in the late 1930s took an interest in the school and incorporated it into his parish. The Rangel Institute was one of about 20 residential schools for Alaska Natives that operated through the 20th century. Its enrollment peaked in the mid-1960s with just over 260 students from 5 to 15 years old. The Institute housed more than Native children. During World War II in 1942, Unangah people who were forcibly relocated from their homes stayed in tents on the Institute grounds. State-collected and individual records recall intense physical, sexual, and emotional abuse of Rangel Institute students. Students were beaten for speaking their first languages, survivors told KSTK in 2016. Reese says Rangel's tribe is working with the city to contact tribal entities who had children sent to the school.
What the tribe is looking at is consultation with affected tribes and then construction of a memorial gazebo honoring all the tribes that attended the Institute and then doing a healing ceremony.
There's a lot of work and healing to do before the property could be redeveloped. That includes survey work, as well as collecting comments and stories for a memorial that will speak to its history before the ground is repurposed for the future. For National Native News in Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
The National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition and the Department of the Interior are collaborating to strengthen information sharing involving Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland's national investigation into U.S. Indian boarding schools. The organization has been researching and sharing information on U.S. Indian boarding schools for years, which includes more than 300 known schools. Haaland's investigation is collecting new information and opening federal records to be analyzed. In June, Haaland announced her boarding school initiative, which directs the department to prepare a report by April 2022. The organization and federal agency signed a memorandum of understanding on Tuesday to share records and information. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael. Our producer is myself, Ethan Sandweiss, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Nadia Ramlagan, Antonia Gonzalez, Jonah Chester, Eric Tegedoff, and Eric Galatas. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. The podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomith on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership funding drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. We'll be listening to a conversation about how election subversion threatens American national security with three noted national security experts. Stay with us.
Dr. Demento, and you are listening to the KBOO News, the only news you need.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
My name is Holly Idelson from Protect Democracy, and welcome to today's conversation about the national security risks of election disinformation and subversion. This briefing follows an open letter to Congress from nearly 100 former national security officials highlighting the security dangers that are caused by efforts to destabilize our elections, including active disinformation campaigns, threats to election workers, and efforts to inject partisan interference into professional election administration. There's been a lot of talk about the politics of these destabilizing factors, but less on the substantial threats that they pose to our national security, something that should be of concern to our leaders across party lines. Today, we have with us three of the national security experts who signed the letter to discuss this issue in greater detail. We do so on the week that President Biden is convening a global summit on democracy, and as Congress and state legislatures continue to actively debate changes to the election systems, for better and for worse. So it's an excellent time for this discussion, and we really appreciate our speakers and our audience participants for making time for this briefing. I'm very pleased to introduce our three distinguished speakers today. Javed Ali is currently Associate Professor of Practice at the Gerald R. Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan, and formerly served as Senior Director for Counterterrorism on the National Security Council. Matt Masterson is currently a non-resident fellow at the Stanford Internet Observatory. He is a former Senior Cybersecurity Advisor at the Department of Homeland Security and a former chair of the Election Assistance Commission. Olivia Troy served as Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor to Vice President Mike Pence. She is currently the founder of the Troy Group and advises clients on global and public policy issues, including misinformation and disinformation threats. And now I'll turn it over to Olivia Troy to kick it off.
Thank you, Holly. And first, thank you everyone for joining us today. Thank you to Protect Democracy for putting together what I think is a very important panel and forum. And I'm grateful to my colleagues, Matt and Javed, for joining me on this important thing. I know it's something that is increasingly of concern to many of us in the national security sector. And like Holly said, we're a group of national security folks who are increasingly concerned, I would say, about what we are seeing in terms of trends here within the United States. And you may have seen the letter that we signed. It was about 100 of us that came together and signed a letter from various backgrounds, whether it was military leaders, former ambassadors, former national security.